Okay, good evening. And it's Wednesday night. It's 7 p.m. here on the west and west coast of the United States. It's time for HBM Revisited, and tonight we're going to be covering Chapter 9. We're working, I'll be reading from the latest edition of The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus by E.J. Gold. And joining me tonight is Marianne, and she has the older version. They're the exact same text except for the introduction, but it's formatted slightly differently, so the page numbers will be different, and from time to time we might need to refer to that. I want to remind everybody that we have a website that, unfortunately for everybody, is being maintained by me, so it's not particularly great, but there are chapter summaries for each of the chapters, and I often will put up exercises to help you in reading through a particular chapter. And those are up for Chapter 9, and I'm going to try to get 10 and 11 up over this coming weekend. And if you go on there and you look at the exercises, there's a fine post by Sandra Eggers. There are 7 questions that I posed, and they are the heart of the chapter that we're going to be working on, and she's taken it really to the next level. This is a cumulative work that we're dealing with here in HBM. We've been through some really interesting chapters, and this one is once again another point of tool for us as we go forward in our own personal work here. So I think I'd like to go ahead and get started. I don't think Simon is on tonight. So what I'm going to do is, Marianne, if you would just read the header of the chapter for us to get us going. Is that okay?
I can do that. Chapter 9, The Study of the Machine. Although we are separate from the machine, we have become hypnotized, immersed in the sleeping state of the machine. One of the purposes of studying the machine is to gather evidence which can help us define the exact nature of this sleep.
This is a moderately long chapter, and I'm not going to take the same approach that I've taken of almost reading through the entire chapter together. We're going to jump around a good bit. But let's just say that this is a foundational chapter. And I'll use that term from time to time as I'm going through. And as we've learned in the beginning chapters, the author is telling us there's something different here. There's the machine or the historical personality, and there's the essential self. And only when those two are working together in some manner can transformation occur in the essential self. This is really breakthrough information for us, and it gives us a chance to really work for our own transformation here. We have tools. We have tools, and they're useful and also available to us. That's the thing that's exciting. Now, actually, before we get really started, I wanted to ask you this earlier, MA, but when did you first hear of this particular chapter and this material?
Well, I first heard about it before it was written.
I see.
I was doing it before I ever read about it.
Okay.
And that was in Crestline. It wasn't until after Crestline that I saw the book.
What is Crestline again?
That was the Maison Rouge, one of the first work circles of E.J. Gold's. Or Red House in Crestline, California.
And when was this?
I had the privilege to be there, 1970, 71.
Wow.
So this material was presented, but not in a nice book where we could read it. We were getting instructions sort of on a day-to-day basis. And we came to this chapter, and I went, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, real stuff. Real stuff to work on.
Real stuff to work on. Now, we recall from when we did Chapter 1 and we first launched our work into HBM that Ivan gave us a bit of a talk on the 1983 World Conference was held in New York, and how when they came back from that, there was a six-month period of time where everybody worked day every night on crystallizing the actual chapters, but now we're hearing that in 1970 or 71, some of this material was starting to be presented.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from?
Well, let me say that the words human biological machine weren't, that wasn't a phrase or a series of words that I heard in Pressline. I didn't hear that title until the book came out.
That hadn't emerged yet.
That hadn't emerged yet. So this was work in progress of EJ's beginning works with groups.
And was this, these are thoughts he had? Had he written down some of the material before, or was he just starting to develop it with the working group
just
there?
Just starting to develop it. It was not written. Nothing was written. I saw no text of any kind. It was a day-to-day basis of, he would give us talks, and we would listen to him, and we were in such an intensive living situation. It was a continuous, sort of a continuous practical exercise, and we would take his words and work with them.
How long were you there, M.A.?
I was there about 2 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And were there, how many people lived at Red House? Or
really hundreds of people came through because we had different outside study groups going. But internally, probably 20 or so, I would say.
So quite a substantial group.
Yeah.
Pretty,
on and off. Yeah.
Pretty active.
Mm-hmm. So. We were very active. And it was expected that we were there to pursue these ideas. And that was EJ was going on that basis, that that's what we were really there for. And I found that when we came to this chapter, what I see now is a chapter, chapter 9.
Yeah.
I felt it was the dividing line in the sand. I really felt that this was it.
Between what and what?
Either go along, get these ideas in your head and go along with them, or this is where you need to stop. And he even says it, close the book and, you know, move on. I really felt that this was the dividing line chapter.
So this particular chapter,
at
that time, 40 years ago at Red House, so then he's saying, there's something different or unique about it, and either accept that work or we'll part friendly company at this point.
Yeah, really, we really need to look at the idea that that we are in a state of sleep. That's one of the things that we really need to do.
Let me read just a quick paragraph, and then I'd like to ask you another couple of questions. So I'm just on the second paragraph. Although, as essential beings, we have separate existence apart from the machine, we have become distracted from our native state, which lies far beyond space and time, hypnotically attracted to the machine by some glittering fascination. And we are presently held in its grip by the power of sensation and emotion, entirely immersed in its sleep. And a result of our total identification with a machine, partaking, whether willingly or unwillingly, of its sleeping state. Wow. So that's, in a sense, expanding on the first seven chapters that we've read and some of the dialogue, like where does Redfin find himself stuck? And suddenly something is possible. And so most of the time we're stuck in the life of this is just an incredible phrase, hypnotically attracted to the machine. So, of course, this is a mark in the sand, because we're going to start to say, do you want something different?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to be very careful here and acknowledge our position, because if we are even at this event tonight, a few of us working together, there's something that compelled us to be here. Something compelled us to move to be here. That's the essential self in its quote-unquote native state. And that native state that the essential self has, we will learn more about it as we proceed. But, so there's a difference. I am not, magnetically only, hypnotically poised in the machine, but maybe there is something different. A different way of looking at it. And this chapter is the one that helps us move in a different direction. So when you hear that, M.A., or what strikes you about it?
That the essential self is different than the machine. And that's really a huge statement. We have to really recognize that statement before we can even go on from there. Because if we don't recognize that, then that's really the place that we have to close it up and move on.
Okay, but this chapter is called Study of the Machine. Mm-hmm. How do we even begin to study the machine? In its present state, the human biological machine functions entirely by reflex. So, and then the next paragraph, we can learn how to see and sense the machine's sleep. We've talked extensively about the idea of how to awaken the machine. And I'm taking it in its literal sense that if we take the attention of the essential self, the essential attention, and turn it on the machine, the human biological machine made up of the physical machine, physical body, the moving centrum, the mental centrum, and the emotional centrum. That's our play. That's us most of the time. And if we place our attention on that, it starts to awaken.
An interesting thing happens there.
It starts to awaken.
Yes.
But what is it that's asleep? How can we actually get far enough away from our own magnetic attraction to the machine to see it? Is that possible?
I think that's really the question. Are we just a sleeping machine looking at us at ourselves as a sleeping machine? Is that possible? And according to EJ, it's not possible. We have to look at it indirectly, because the minute we turn our sleeping selves inward, we wake up slightly. So there's a caveat there.
So, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. On the top of page 65 in this edition, it's the paragraph that starts with, but it is not enough to just study the machine in an ordinary way. That is, identified with the machine. This would be the same as the machine studying itself, which you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But he continues on and he says, but can we study this in much the same way that an anthropologist would study any other primate? Consider this for a moment. And one of the thoughts that I had was, let's say that you don't know how to do it. Or every time you start to do it, you just forget. You just don't do it. What do they mean by studying the machine? I don't know. But consider this as a process. What if you were an anthropologist and you came upon the cultural society that you happen to live in every day. You happen to live here in this small town of Grass Valley along with me, and maybe here near these individuals. What do they do? What do they like? How do they move around? What do they speak? What are their, is their emotional signature, which is what we heard last week. We heard about that. So you begin to study the machine as an anthropologist would. And as you develop those tools, can you turn that same study onto yourself?
I think one of the things right before that paragraph that you just read is really important. I don't know if you were going to go back to that, but that we have to, can I go ahead and read that section?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
But first of all, before we can even set out to gather evidence of any kind about the machine, we must agree that we do, in fact, live our lives in a human biological machine. We have to agree to that before we can even, before we can go on.
Okay, so what does this mean, that we live our lives in a human biological machine? Curious phrasing. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I go back to the idea of the essential self and our purpose for waking up, wanting to wake up.
Okay. Okay. Good. That was from last week. That, yes, so Sandra is saying that the study, use this idea as an anthropologist, study others, and then when you get the how to do that, then get somebody that would help you and turn that same study on yourself. It would be, it's an interesting thing. Everybody here is like, you know, in a certain way, kind of an advanced student and player on this field. But what if you took the exercise for all of these advanced people and you said, okay, you sit down with each other and you say, tell me what you see about my machine. And could, first of all, you as an individual actually speak objectively about that and not put your stuff into it? And can you bear that? Can you accept that kind of challenge?
Well, I think what mostly happens is people recognize your machine-ness and tell you about it rather than you sitting down and open, in an open state and saying, oh, you know, tell me about my machine-ness. I think our machines are very resistant to these ideas, so they're not going to be that open to hearing about all of this stuff. They're going to want to continue in their machine way. So we have to be careful about enhancing the machine in the same way as just observing it. Are we observing it, or are we enhancing our machine by being told, oh, we have, this is what's happening with your machine, and all of a sudden we puff up, or, you know, we go in these emotional states. So we have to be careful of that.
So another part of the machine simply reacts.
Yeah, another part of the machine simply reacts. So
how do you objectively study your machine?
Hello, David.
Simon, you're there.
Yes. I finally got in through.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Guillermo.
Hello. Yeah. I was thinking that to what you were saying, and I agree with you, although if we are exposing ourselves to the help of a third eye, an objective eye from the outside, we have to keep in mind that our machine is going to react to that. And that is part of being asleep too, because that's part of the habit of the sleeping machine to react. So we have to be ready to do that game, or tell me what do I do.
So we have a couple of issues. First of all, in the previous chapter, we're working with the idea of awakening the machine. We're just, what does it mean to awaken the machine? And to begin sensing what it feels like when the machine is in the waking state. That's a process that's critical. And Silverdale has talked to us about the idea of a vibratory sensation, having a vibratory sensation of the essential self when the machine is in the waking state. We can do that. That takes sensing and attention and effort. So we begin to get a sense of when the machine is awake, and we can begin to get a sense of when the machine, therefore, is asleep.
Only through contrast.
Only through contrast. This is the key idea I'm going to be bringing up as this chapter goes on. So,
mm-hmm.
Only through contrast. Very good.
It's also been said that if you actually wake up, it may be the worst day of your life. You know, people have, I've seen people talk to them and they've said, oh, they all make it sound grandiose, like, ethereal and a lovely, like it must be a lovely experience to wake up. But it's been said, and through my experience with my own myself, it may actually be in your life the worst possible day of your life, because it's very uncomfortable. It's very strange to be in a state your body may be expanding, it may be contracting, it may be going through all these things. So it may not be the happy-go-lucky thing that people think of. So that's important to know too.
We bring myths to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
We bring myths to this process, and we're breaking down those myths by direct study here. Right now is we're trying to develop what is your sleeping machine like exactly, and how can you begin to study your particular sleeping machine. There's a reason to do that. There's a reason to study the machine that we are in, and the reason for that is because of the discernment that we are attempting to develop here. The discernment between the two electrical bodies that we bring to this game here. One electrical body is the essential self, and the other one is the human biological machine. And they interact. But they're not the same thing. They are different. The sleeping machine, or as Silverdale has called it, and I think it's really very good, is this historical personality is built up. Built up with a tons of habitual habits. That's mostly where we live. We don't really accept that as a case.
We don't
accept that that's what we do, but we just, that's us, we say. That's just me. That's how I am. And I'll never forget the first time when I was discovering some of this spiritual literature, and I was so excited by the phrase. This was, I was like 19. I was reading Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine, and on the cover was the phrase, to know thyself, and I was telling my father about it, and I was just so excited, and he says, what do you mean? I know myself. Here I am. And I didn't know what to do with that. It was like, pop my bubble. Okay, so And we go on. I'm going to jump ahead a few pages.
That was really ordinary life, wasn't it?
Well,
very much ordinary. The ordinary way that we attempt to pull my
enthusiasm for the waking state into ordinary life,
mm-hmm.
because he had no context. We are attempting to develop and hold as a permanent point of view this contrast between ordinary life, the sleeping machine, and the life of the essential self. We're working here to develop a methodology of transforming the essential self, not trying to make the machine better.
Mm-hmm.
Could care less.
And if we bring that up to people who are not attempting that same aim as we are, they probably won't thank you for it.
There's no context, so it makes it very uncomfortable for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had no context for this. But I'm jumping ahead now to the top first full paragraph on page 68. And this is a paragraph that starts, "This initial discomfort during the process of entering the waking state from the sleeping state is the principal reason we fall back into the sleeping state."
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've marked down for myself, and I'm going ahead to the next page as well, at the bottom of page 69, "We may recognize these symptoms as the same symptoms signal the death of the machine. And, in a way, the waking state is very much like the death of the machine, because in the waking state, the machine has lost face. It, in a sense, is no longer has the force to impose its own will upon the situation. Even more importantly, its negative emotions, which provide it with a sense of continuity, have inexplicably vanished." And I wrote down as a note there for us, can we notice the transition? Can we get subtle enough in our observation to notice the transition between states here?
Does your body do a little kind of a glitch when you read that paragraph that you are going to be experiencing the death of your body? I mean, does that make your heartbeat a little faster? Like, is that what it's about? Is that it? Oh, okay. So now, you know, it's heavy stuff here.
It's a battle of with the battle of will, because the machine exerts its common will of survival, and that's all it is. It's the survival of the biological machine. That's its imperative. And that's fine. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it forgets to turn it off and when it's not needed anymore. And so we have a problem. So it's a battle of wills,
mm-hmm.
from a very inexperienced and weak will called the will of the essential self and the very powerful will of the sleeping machine. Simon, are you going to read or?
Okay. Let me see if I can catch up with them, with at least in the last part. Tianjo, if we take direct evidence from a temporary awakened looking at our machine, indirect evidence from, in parentheses, from sleep looking back at more lucid moments, and hearsay evidence, and we get agreement, then we have useful knowledge.
Hey, do we understand this point? This is from Harry, I guess. This is a profound point.
No.
Somebody needs to turn down their volume on their computer. Okay, so maybe we can't observe our sleeping machine right now as it's in its sleeping mode, but we can gather direct and specific evidence of it that it was asleep. And I guarantee you, everybody online this evening, watching us or listening to us, has that had that experience today. Guaranteed. Now, so if you know that that's the case, that in this particular type of sleeping episode, let's say, the next time you go into that, that you know you're going to be in a sleeping state, bring that knowledge with you and stand to the side just a bit. Don't change it, but attempt to stand to just the side and watch the sleep unfold. It's a terrific event when you do that. You're awed by it, watching the mechanicality of the machine. I'll give you an example of how, a simple example of how it works physically in me. Sometimes when I go to clients, I have to wear a tie. I don't know that I could tell you how to tie a tie, but my hands can certainly do it. And I put the tie on, and then they just tie the tie. Quite interesting to watch. It's a little frightening in a certain way. It's a little frightening to watch it. If I watched it too deliberately, I'd be forced to take each specific step and recreate it that way, which you can do and get back to the place of awakening.
David, did you read, did you already mention the states, the reaction that the machine has when we try to wake up?
A little bit, but go ahead.
Because that, as I was reading the chapter before, that thing really threw me off. I could not see any reference in that in myself, although my degree of awakening when I bring my machine activated, let's say, it must be to a certain small degree, but I never noticed that kind of those intense reactions from the machine as losing ground towards the, you know, against the essential self. So I got lost in that.
Let's look at page, top of page 71, where it's in the chapter, the paragraph says, "What keeps the machine in sleep is our fear of the discomfort of awakening. This is the real meaning of inertia. But what is it that keeps us, the essential self, which is not the machine, immersed in the sleep of the machine?" That's a question I'd like to pose to Silverdale, but let's start with the first part of the paragraph. What keeps the machine in sleep is our fear of the discomfort of awakening. Is that what you're mentioning, Simon?
No, but what I'm bringing attention is to the reaction, because there is a moment of volition that is out of fear. It's a straight volition of me to wake up the machine through remembering myself.
Correct.
So there is no fear. There is a straight act of volition. So it may be a really small degree of awakening that is not threatening the machine. But I never saw that reaction, physical or fear emotion or physical reaction to, you know, heart beating or stuff like that, because I'm awakening.
Let me pose a suggestion that when we are in a kind of a safe environment in our work in this manner, when we, let's say we're walking along and we kind of remember, I'm going to remember myself right now. And you do. That's more or less a simple, safe environment. You're not stepping on anybody's, the machine's toes at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe. It's a simple way of doing it. Those are valuable practices to strengthen our essential self attention and the will of the essential self. Those are important, critical. However, take the same attention to awaken the machine into a time when you want to be by yourself, or you're angry, or you're depressed. or you're really on a roll at work or something, and you're the cat's pajama, you're like in charge at that moment. Let's take when you see that and change that when you attempt to awaken it. There's a battle that goes on at that point. But note those states, as Harry was saying, note them down. And that's the beginning of watching what it is for your machine to be in the sleeping state. Okay?
Yes.
I would just like to say that that in this chapter, EJ also says that there are various ways of waking up in various schools. There's various techniques. And this is a gentle process, but for example, there was one teacher, and I'm not sure if it's this one that he's talking about in the book, but one of the teachers had a way of waking up people in the audience. You know, the entire audience would be woken up en masse. Problem with that is it'd be like taking a hit of acid. You'd come down. You would not stay in that state. So this gentle way of doing it is more long-term, more long-acting, more permanent way of doing it. So these observations that we do sometimes are not earth-shattering type of things. They're just
subtle
observations.
Like steady Eddie, yeah.
Steady Eddie.
Let me ask you, back in Red House, what are some of the exercises you guys did? Do you recall?
Well, we had we actually did this hearsay part of it because we were in an intense group, so we had people watching for the sleep of the machine of others, and so. Sometimes that's necessary. It can be an interesting way of doing it. I do think that somewhere along the way that we do need others to help us with this process. In that particular thing, it was just a very intense, short-term way of doing it.
Well, what do you mean by intense? What's an example?
24/7. You know, it's here we're talking about a few moments a day of turning around and observing ourselves. A few, you know, here and there, not a 24/7 experience. That's the intenseness that I'm talking about. Where you are being observed, you are observing. That's a different way of focusing.
So everybody was living together,
mm-hmm.
and the intention was to focus on the sleeping machine,
mm-hmm.
and develop the skills on practical work on others, as they say.
You had to solve your own sort of desire to run away. You know, is this waking up, is this practice that we're doing here something that you want to do, something that you that you want to continue with? And that's a constant question, you know.
What were you running away from?
Yeah, what are you running away from? That's a really interesting question.
So when you were there in Red House.
And people would run away. I mean, they would.
Why?
We were in a.
So why?
Why would they run away?
Yeah.
Because the sleeping machine, when it gets scratched a little bit, just the surface, even the surface of it, the reactions, the intensity, the body reactions, mental reactions. There's a lot of things that go on. It's interesting to look at it from a distance where you can say, oh, you know, it couldn't have been that bad. Believe me. When you're really scratching under the surface there, when you're really
So what were people doing, though? I mean, were they saying to you, why are you acting like that, M.A.? What are you doing? That's your ego. Was that kind of thing?
That could be part of it. That could be part of it. There. How about the idea that, okay, here's a, you watch somebody, there's a light bulb on the floor, and somebody walks over it. They don't stop to pick it up. They just continually walk over it. And you point it out. Do you notice that there's a light bulb on the floor? Do you think you could, you know, is that something that you, is it in your environment? Can you see? So it wasn't, we think that we are so aware, but when you're in an intense situation, you realize that our awareness of our environment is narrow, very, very, very narrow. And living with a group of people, you can get really shut down. So it's easy to walk over a light bulb and not pick it up.
So people are constantly saying to you, why aren't you doing this? What about this? Why are you acting in this manner? So you have the, you're rubbing against other people, and a lot of times they're saying it to you because of their own ego.
The rubbing against?
Yes.
That is a critical part of group work that way.
Bring it out.
The idea that one's sleeping state rubs up against somebody else's sleeping state.
Yuck.
Hurts.
I had a friend, this was when I was living in L.A. in a different group altogether. He told me that he'd go through the day, and he'd get home, he'd go through his front door, he'd lock his door, and then he'd lean his back up against it, and he'd go, ah, he'd sigh a relief that now he could relax and, quote-unquote, be himself. And what we're really talking about is the unfettered expression of his sleeping state without challenge from anybody, without anybody saying, hey, you can pick that up too. I'm busy over here washing the dishes. What, can you give a hand? And sometimes the best way to work together in groups is to have a practical activity together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I think we're back. So that's what I'm trying to get from you,
mm-hmm.
to show the individuals what's it like. What does it feel like when you're actually in an environment where you're rubbing together with that much intensity?
Actually, it's really hard to talk about that because you really need to be in the now to experience that. We're not in the now. We're in the far distant.
And your memory.
Yeah, the memory, that is another aspect of the sleeping state.
That's
to me,
right.
You're not in the waking state.
Do you miss it?
Do I miss that intensity?
Yes.
No. No, I don't. Do I think that it was valuable and useful? Yes. But it was a grand experiment during that time. That may not come around for other people. That may not be the, that's not the only way people work. And it may not, that type of environment, living situation may not happen again. So we are this book.
Okay.
Now, this is what we have to work with. We have
yes.
these little things.
Simon, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you, just as a And Marianne, if you remember, maybe other, just to compare, you know, what is the nature of what we're talking about here, some other exercises that some other schools that you may know have used, maybe not as gentle as these, but that has triggered that awakening. Do you remember of anything that comes to your mind?
It's usually the teacher himself or herself that has the power to do that. I think Baba G was one of those people that used to get thousands and thousands of people together, and they would.
I think he's asking like in a work community.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it. I mean, it's just, are you willing to put yourself in a position where you are willing to work with other people? You know, and that's a rare environment to find others who are willing to be in a work situation and to be exposed, to expose themselves to other workers on the path.
It also requires that you have somebody that's truly awake to...
All right.
Watch over the whole thing. Otherwise, you can really get mired down. That's it's an inherent problem with that kind of work. So to have an authentic teacher there is critical, I do believe. You know, I don't advocate a bunch of people getting together and telling each other off on a day-to-day basis.
No,
that's
we do advocate getting together and working together.
Mm-hmm.
Attempting to work together. You will have egos. You will. What tools do you have? What is possible? You know, and it isn't possible for people to suddenly find a teacher. But it is possible, for instance, to show up for such a meeting tonight. Did you read the chapter? Did you do some of the exercises? Did you look at the exercises on the website? Did you provide the effort level that Sandra Eggers did with the kind of answers she gave for others to use? She didn't write that for herself. She wrote that, took the extra effort to write it for others. Why didn't I do that? Why didn't you do that? Because you were so busy this week, right? I love that one. I was so busy, I couldn't do it. She took 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, maybe, to write that. Out of a 7-day week, 24/7, as you put it, we couldn't read the chapter? That's the inertia of the sleeping machine driving itself along, just doing what you're quote unquote supposed to do.
There's also a time factor here. So if we were to go along with that idea where we just casually go along and here and there and we don't have any intensity to it.
I think, Mariana has pointed a couple of very important issues here, I mean, towards this. One is that the man, that the guy from the outside, we don't have it, the one that is on the other side. And that she mentioned, too, when you asked him about that, if she could reproduce that, and she says, we are not in the now. So...
We are in the now.
Yes, I am. You too.
The reflections of 40 years ago.
Yeah, the reflections of 40 years ago don't apply now.
That's correct. So what applies right now is what you bring to the game. Right now is the work that is before us and is possible. That's what's before us.
That's why this book is so great, because there's actually some... things that we can still work with, that where we're not in that situation where from 40 years ago.
But we have
something to work with.
And that's what that's the map we're unfolding here. It's very good. Mm-hmm. I want to make a couple of points, because we're going to run out of time.
Mm.
And one point I want to make is on the top of page 75. I'm going to read two quick paragraphs. They're critical. The first objective aim is to gather evidence of the machine sleep. We can do this as we are, even in sleep. The matter of fact, if we think about it, is only in sleep that we can gather evidence of the machine's sleep. This is the hearsay methodology. This is an accomplishable aim. Remember last chapter, everybody?
Yeah.
Remember the last chapter? That was called inner aims. This is an accomplishable aim. Are you doing this work? All we need for gathering evidence of the machine sleep is a minimum of attention. We don't even need the help of any supernatural agency, like the mysterious soul or some other ethereal observer. Let me ask you a question, everybody that's here tonight. Do you believe this? Do you believe you can gather evidence of your own sleep?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do you?
Absolutely.
Do you believe that you can become knowledgeable about the sleep of your particular machine? And let me ask that to the people online, too. A simple yes or no. No is okay, but let's express it. Do you believe that that is possible for you? And Simon, can you read the answers if there are any?
Okay, yeah, I was waiting for this.
Okay. So now I'm asking you to do a slight amount more than just listen or read through the book. Do you believe and can you declare that this is an objective aim that you can accomplish? A study of your own machine.
For boss, yes, I am asleep most of the time.
Okay.
Mike, possible, yes.
Okay.
Pian Joe, in part, yes, but the hearsay is needed to confirm.
Good, good.
Silverdale, the fundamental objective of self-observation is to understand how exactly we are in sleep. And I am with Harry, with Silverday, in the same answer myself.
Exactly.
So, Stinghawk, yes, I gather evidence, but it goes in one ear and out the other.
That's okay, but that's okay. The effort of gathering the evidence on itself is virtue itself, okay? The effort of doing it is something. And is there any more comments?
Yes. Let me see. Rainbow Bridge, remembering a time when the machine awakened helped one to notice the sleep by comparison, maybe. Agniridaya, remembering I was in more awakened state and I can compare present sleep with that.
Good. Yes.
Sama, I don't or even know if I am asleep, so all I can do is study the machine, is to keep studying the machine. And myself, I mean, regarding, I repeat what Silverdale said, was the fundamental objective of the self-observation is to understand how exactly we are in sleep. So that is the work that I do. I study my movements, my habits. Do I will this? Do I will to do that movement? Am I sleeping or am I really present in what I am doing?
That's correct.
You know,
so,
and in taking notes of all these things, I realize that that I am not willing it. That is pure habits, and that is sleeping.
Okay, I'm going to give a tool that I have found to be extremely important in learning about the sleep of your particular machine. This is a tool, and I call it's a tool of confession.
Mm-hmm.
If you observe your machine and you observe how your machine has been in sleep and you confess that to a fellow worker objectively, what happens is that you separate from the identification of the machine in that moment. You gain power at that moment. But you have to be willing to say something. Like the last couple of weeks, I talked about how I observed my machine and the envy of how it worked when I was in the home of somebody that had a lot of money, and how envy worked in me.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? That didn't diminish me by sharing that, because now I'm grateful for having shared that, because every time I go into that environment, it's fun to watch the machine, in a sense, do its thing. But it's not me that's doing it. That's the point. That's the power we have. And that's what we can do, is to separate ourselves in that way. And Silverday used the term exact nature of sleep, because it's the exact nature of my sleep. And you have an emotional signature most of the time. Most of the time, you are not aware of your emotional signature, but I guarantee you all your friends are. You have a physical posture all the time. Just change it. Have a different motion. Do something different. Move in a different manner. Walk differently. Go in a different little path, and you'll start to see how locked into your physical motions you are. You have a way of thinking about things. Somebody brings something up and you immediately conclude on it. So gather exact evidence, and you can use in this group, it's a safe place to share and confess how that machine that you came in with, how it works. It's a safe space here to do that, because we're all working along the same path. And as we go, we're getting near the end of our time, and I point you, of course, to the last few paragraphs in the chapter, and the E.J. Gold presents to us an enormous, but boy, is it an important challenge, and a number of us have taken this challenge of recording for a 30-day period what your machine sleeps like. And that's when we talk about the different kinds of knowledge, direct knowledge, circumstantial knowledge, and hearsay. It's very difficult to gather direct knowledge of the sleeping machine. It's possible. I've done it, and I've shared some of those. So, but attempt to do it. Circumstantial, you just remember, oh yeah, I must have been asleep. Hearsay, others help you understand that. Seek out that help when you can. Seek out that help. And as the old joke about, when someone dies and sitting there before God and spewing out all the sins that they've ever had and just these horrors, and God is sitting there bored stiff because there's nothing new that he's heard. All God wants is, he's hoping for one new joke. So bring one new joke to us and share that with us here. And for the moment, that's the time we have. And I want to thank you for coming again on this Wednesday night and helping us revive HBM. We'll see you next week, Wednesday, 7 p.m.
Thank you, David. Thank you, May. Good to see
you.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you for your collaborations.
4 paws, can you send me the log, please? Yay!
Oh, thank you.
I agree.
It's good to be here. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad that you can, and you're welcome. You're welcome. I might pick it up.
I feel like,
when I mic's off. Could you go ahead and turn them off, please?